and it's a lot of experience here. The only thing I ask of you is,
we got about 15 minutes for each person. I was going to do 20. We were throwing it around, mm-hmm. and then they said, "No, no, you have time for questions and answers."
Absolutely.
So you were at the last one, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're an old hand at this. So we're going to let you start it off.
Okay.
Okay.
Will somebody give me a 15-minute warning?
We will. I will.
Okay.
I'm going to set the timer up.
I think I'm loud enough without this. I'm Mary and I'm an addict. My clean date is November 17th, 1986. And for that, I'm truly grateful. You know, when I first got clean, I attempted to get clean in 1983 through various other fellowships. And, you know, my ready time is different. You know, it was different. Like Jimmy was talking about, you know, I was a slow learner as well. And unfortunately, a big part of my story is relapse, a huge part. But, you know, when I got clean and I was introduced to the fellowship, it was the name that attracted me. I hate to even admit that out loud. It was the name that attracted me because I was a heroin addict. And, you know, back in those days, people would say, oh, women can't stay clean. Women can't get clean. You know, and I would hear messages like that. And, you know, it's kind of part of why I got clean was out of defiance. I'm going to show you. And I did. But when I got involved in my own recovery, it came a little bit later than sooner. I worked the first three steps and I thought I was done. And I jumped with both feet into service. I had 30 days clean. And as you can see, which is really indicative of the times haven't changed much, most of the people in service were men. Very indicative of today's climate. But I wanted to learn how to maneuver and how Narcotics Anonymous worked. And so, like I said, I jumped into service at 30 days and I got an H&I commitment. And that was my first introduction to service work. I didn't know what I was doing, and I don't think any of us knew what we were doing. But I knew that I wanted to give something back. You know, I knew the feeling of how it was to be told, you're going to die. I had a sponsor tell my husband at the time, she's going to die. And, you know, most of the people that I had in my life, the way I was going and the way where my addiction had taken me, I was really on my way. But there was something about H&I that attracted me. It was like when you see a light go off in somebody's eyes, when you see, you know, someone finally get it. You know, we come in here hopeless and miserable, and we just don't think that it's going to work. This isn't going to work. You know, been through treatment several times, been through this, that, or the other, jail, you know, all these other kinds of things. But there was something about giving back to the fellowship that made me keep coming back. And there were a lot of times in my recovery where I didn't want to stay clean for me, but because I had that H&I commitment, I had to stay clean to to be involved in H&I. I got clean in Baytown, Texas. And, you know, when I got there, I was like, I'm from Houston. Never been to a small town, never knew. And I thought, what am I doing in this one horse town? And I came to love it. There's something about a slower pace. People seemed a lot more friendlier. And we wanted to start a meeting in Baytown. And at the time, there was probably about half a dozen of us. We didn't know what we were doing, but we wanted to have an NA meeting. And AA is real big in Baytown, Texas. And, you know, when I was in treatment so many times, you know, I'd go to the AA club And, you know, it'd be all these old ladies with a cigarette hanging out of their mouth, drinking coffee, a room full of smoke. And they would look at us addicts coming in there like, what are you doing here? You look like trash. And I probably did. But, you know, and I don't want to take away from that fellowship, because I know that it helps a lot of people. And there are a lot of people in my life that I love dearly that attend AA. But I did not find my place or my home until I got to Narcotics Anonymous. There was something about a hopeless addict being clean that just was very attractive to me. So because we didn't have the answers on how to start a group, we looked in the phone book, and at that time in the white pages, there was a group called Keep It Simple. It had Narcotics Anonymous, and it had Keep It Simple on Bel Air Boulevard. And this little shack, this little Boy Scout shack. And I'm telling you what, man, that place was lit up. You would walk into this small place. It seemed big at the time. And people were so welcoming and so loving and so wanting to help us to start this group. And the first person that approached us was Gary Holman. Gary's passed now. But he and his wife gave us like the connection to the literature, you know, because we didn't know shit. We didn't know we had a book. And we were still using the other fellowship. You know, we didn't have the guide that you guys have now and the guiding prayer. I mean, we had nothing. I still have my original basic text, a third edition. And when Harvey came, I thought I lost it. I didn't.
Yay.
I hold on to that like a prize. Anyway, Gary and his wife gave us the connection to the World Service Office. And so I think we bought books from you guys in the beginning. They were so helpful. Chester was there, Roe, you know, some other people that are still around. And we were so grateful because, you know, it wasn't about a competition. It wasn't about any of that. It wasn't about, hillbillies out there, you know, it wasn't nothing like that. They were very helpful, gave us all the resources, and we started a group that still exists to this day. And so, you know, I think that sometimes we lose sight of what's important. You know, I think sometimes we lose sight. We get caught up in the business of NA sometimes. Sometimes our tempers get the best of us. I know in the current climate of things, we get caught up in disrespecting one another, treating each other less than, saying things that we shouldn't say in anger, or feeling like we're better than, or we know more, because maybe we have a little more time than the newcomer. And we really need to pay attention to that. That is not attractive. There were a lot of people in Keep It Simple that are gone now. James H., he's still around. Wes, he's gone. But those folks at Keep It Simple were so instrumental in helping us get started. And at the time, we were trying to figure out a name. What are we going to call our group? You know, we had all kinds of names. And we came up with, my sister did, who's now gone, who died from the disease. We called it, she suggested to call it Keep It Clean. So we kept that name, Keep It Clean. You know, when I go to that group, I'm always reminded of the beginnings of what we had. You know, we were doing things that, you know, asking vendors or asking merchants to contribute different merchandise for our anniversary, which is certainly a tradition violation, but we didn't know. They gave us the shit, so we took it. We had a TV for raffle. I mean, we had all kinds of stuff. Airline tickets. But you know what? At ignorance, we sought the answers that we needed to seek. And I guess that's kind of my message, is that if you don't know how to do something, talk to an old timer. They'll give you the time. They love to talk. The rest of these guys are going to be love talking in a minute. But, you know, they have the experience. And if certainly, if I don't have an answer to something, I'll seek it. Or I'll call the World Service Office. Or I'll call somebody that I've met in service. You know, I think that it has been an honor and a privilege to be a member of Narcotics Anonymous. And I don't take that for granted. I have a lot of fun in recovery, but I also take my recovery very seriously. And, you know, I still have a very healthy fear of using. So I don't do the things that are going to put me in a place where it'll be right there in front of my face. You know, I don't put myself in situations or with people that are using. And I say that to say this. You know, sometimes I think that when we're doing the right thing for the right reason, and I mean really for the right reason, for the still suffering addict, whatever that means to you, we can never go wrong. And we sought the answers that we needed to seek, and it was a wonderful experience. You know, I wish I would have been involved when the Hascona and all the areas broke off from Lone Star. Because when we were a part of Lone Star, it was a blast. I mean, it was like a weekend service thing. You know what I mean? I mean, it was a party. And now it's like for one day, so it's kind of a drag, but anyway. But anyway, but I wasn't involved in that. And I, had I been involved, and I know Max will probably talk about how we broke off the areas that make up, you know, Hascona and the metro areas, who has more experience in that. But had I been involved, I probably would have nixed that idea because I don't like change that much. You know, I was very comfortable being part, our area being part of Lone Star. But it's not, and it's okay. And the last thing I want to say is, you know, I'm involved and have been involved in starting a new area. And the area was the Freedom Area. And the area was started because we were not seeing what we needed to be fed spiritually on the business level of Narcotics Anonymous. So what we did, we decided, we did research for about 6 months. And the area is really huge. Hascona is very huge. And so we thought we were better served with a smaller area. And let me tell you something, it was a painful experience because a lot of folks didn't appreciate us leaving Hascona. A lot of folks felt like we were walking away from a problem rather than facing it. I say this to say, sometimes you have to walk away. Sometimes when you know something is not working for you, that you have to walk away just, you know, just to be okay. And that's exactly what we did. We work in cooperation with Hascona. I still serve as an H&I panel member with Hascona. And I appreciate the experience I've learned through Hascona and its members. But the Freedom Area is coming along, and we're very appreciative of all the areas, the surrounding areas in Houston, and certainly I am, because there are a lot of folks who have a lot of heart, who are doing a lot of good in all these areas. So that's my experience. I'm going to end with, I thank you all for being here. I'm privileged to be a member, and that's it for me. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, my name's Chester, I'm an addict.
Hey, Chester.
And the history meeting, I've been wondering when you was gonna ask me to come up here and share it. I'm a sensitive man.
What's your clean date?
My clean date is March the 7th of 1980. And when I came in the program, I came to the other program, it was a halfway house on Skid Row, kind of over there. They took me to my first NA meeting. They carried me over there, and I, now that I was thinking about today, I think they just let my ass out and left me. But it was called the Source Club, Source Group. It was a front room of a house. Gary knows my story over here real good. It was in the front room of a house, and I think we gave them money to meet there once or twice a week. And Gary H. was there. He talked. Mm-hmm. The meetings were an hour and a half long mm-hmm. back then. And usually we had one member who liked to talk the whole first hour. what I do remember, what happened with me was I heard about Gino told me about PADAP. And I don't mind breaking that anonymity. So I hitchhiked all the way down Memorial. It was 1980, right? You hitchhiked a lot. All the way down here to this meeting that there was like 200 people in. And almost all these kids were all from Memorial. So I was a little out of place. And one of my close friends today, John, he spoke for an hour and a half. And he'd only smoked a joint in his whole life, you know, about it. And I mean, I did not fit, right? This was not my kind of place. You know? So then I heard about NA, and then this guy took me to my first NA meeting. And I swear, in the very first NA meeting I ever attended, they were fighting over the money. And Gary threw the money across the room, and they was yelling, and things were starting. And I felt right at home. I thought this is where I fit, right? And I think Gary here gave me my first, back then we used AA chips and we stamped NA into them. And he was giving them out, I'll never forget as long as I live. And most of the people I knew that were addicts had all been in prison. And he said, "Do you want this chip?" And I said, "Well, I haven't been in prison." I said, "I might not be an addict." And he says, "Well, you might not be." He says, "Maybe you need to go to prison before you're sure." Needless to say, I got my chip. And after about, back then, there was only that group, the Source Group. There was a few hospital meetings, trims. You go to this trims, one yeah. hospital trims meeting, and everybody in there was nodding, you know, scratching. I mean, everybody. And HIH, I went there. I went there until they kicked me out because some little girl there. But Tony R. had a recovery center for women. And I went there, and that was my second kind of home group. Of course, it was women's halfway house. But it was an NA meeting, right? And I'll never forget, as long as I live, I'll say this real quick, is that after the meeting one night, we all went to drink coffee or whatever, and somebody asked me, they said, "Are you gay?" And nobody in my entire life had ever asked me that question. And I said, "No, why?" And they said, "Well, everybody over there is gay." And I was like, "Really?" That never even dawned on me. But she saved my life. Tony R., she gave me my very first year chip. And it was almost like she followed me around the whole year, seeing every little good thing I did. I cried, I think, at that thing. But anyway, back then we went around from meeting to meeting to meeting. I mean, that was the only thing you could do back then. And Gary B. over here, he asked me about us starting our own group, a 7-night-a-week, 8 o'clock meeting. And actually, we had, keep it simple, we had those meetings in his front room the first month, a few months, until another guy named Preston, he found this little Cub Scout place. And he reminded us daily that he was the landlord. But it was great. It was great. You know, we started that group, and Gino came over and tried to tell us all how to run everything. Yeah. And we were like, "We're going to do it our way, Gino." And so then he went over there and helped those guys, and I think Hooked on Drugs got started. And it was a great group. And we always had this competitiveness with Hugs Not Drugs. They called us the Keep It Sick group, and we called them Hogs Not Dogs. But we supported each other 100%. We'd take turns having dances, Thanksgivings, every holiday, everything. It was always a clubhouse in NA that fed everybody, and we had some unbelievably crazy dances. Mm-hmm. We always had them. I miss that the whole lot. But, you know, our group started getting a little bigger, and we were. At one point, we decided to put our phone number in the phone book. You know, we were the first NA group in the state of Texas that I know of, at least in Houston, that had an NA phone number in the book. And it was just hooked to a tape recorder in our building. But at least they actually got some kind of information when they call NA. And it was fun watching NA grow. From the moment we started that clubhouse, everybody knew where to be at 7 o'clock. You'd have to think. You could just go there, and the same people went all the time, and pretty soon you got real close to one another. And you know what? Out of that first 3 years of over there, there's probably 20 people, maybe more, that have over 30 years from that original 1988, 182. Even Andre back there, I remember him going over there. Stan over here.
Stan.
There's a few people in this room that went back there in the 80s. But anyway, I'm bad with history, right? So I might get a little of this wrong, but you know, people would steal the safe. You know, we had a little safe that you could pick it up and carry, and we're like wondering, oh, well, somebody stole it. You know, and we had some great times. And I remember when the area got started, I was not involved in starting Haskona, but I do remember they asked me to speak at their very first function. It was at Bear Creek Park. It was a big honor. I think Bob M. had a whole lot to do with that. No, I'm Gary maybe too, I don't know. I wasn't involved in that. But I do know that we were part of the Lone Star Convention.
Yeah.
They sent me this, the first NA Texas, they sent it to us in these gray binders. And all of us in NA just about got one. And I donated mine to that Lone Star Convention. I'm the only one I know of that doesn't have his anymore. I gave it away, I should have. You know. But Gary and there's quite a few people involved in that Lone Star Convention. But for me, I've always been involved in the group level. I like to mop the floors. There's no politics in mopping floors. You know, nobody's going to come along and tell you did a bad job. You know. And I'd always move the chairs around to confuse everybody about one thing. But you know what? We went through all the tradition stuff. I mean, we're talking history. You know, when you start a clubhouse or even in a small group, mm-hmm. you're going to come up with things like, can you bar somebody from a meeting? I mean, what's the worst? You know, we had guys just kiss strangers right in the meeting, and then they're just like, no. People selling drugs in the meeting.
Yes.
People getting high outside. You know, yeah. You come up with a lot of things you've got to learn. You know. And there was a point where we knew that we rented that building from a church. And there was a point where we knew that that wasn't going to last forever. Matter of fact, we spent so much money to the area the first 10 years because we didn't hardly have to pay much rent. That it was, they about died when we had to move, right? But we started a nonprofit, and we had to go and learn how to have a clubhouse that followed the tradition. So there was a lot to learn. I've been to NA all over the world, which is really wonderful. And I've been to an NA meeting in Baghdad, you know, right in the middle of the war. And you ain't been to an NA meeting as serious as that one. But yeah, I think I've already just about ran out of my history, NA history.
About the groups, the only groups that we had.
Well, that back then, yeah. I mean, then Baytown, I remember when you got started. They had a clubhouse in Baytown that I used to do all the DJing at.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on the second floor. And when you hear about rocking the house,
mm-hmm.
we rocked the house. I mean, that building
would move. Shake.
I couldn't even play albums in there. And we started a camp out. A few of us did in about 81. It was two or three of us. And then next Memorial Day, there was six or eight of us. Next one, 10 or 12. By probably 1995, there was 100 and something people in NA that would show up from all over the state.
Mm-hmm.
And we made no money from it. If we had anything left over, we gave it to area. But we didn't want it to be structured hardly. Meeting times was a dark. We gave away pine cones. Yeah. Oh, I forgot that Tony R. At one point, we didn't have any literature either. We didn't have an NA text or nothing at first. All we had was a little white book, right? Well, we needed chips, and we were tired of going to AA buying those aluminum chips and stamping, right? So Tony R. started making chips, right? And they were shiny brass. They were pretty, right? She made them for about a year or two, and then all of a sudden these people from California showed up. Well, what are you guys doing? You can't do that. And so we got a little trouble for that. I DJed NA dances where I'm at midnight, I'm DJing, I look out on the dance floor in this big NA club, and there's a guy butt naked dancing around. True story. This is history, right? This is history. I'll say this last thing, I'm going to pass the mic. My friend, this is NA, and we got in a lot of trouble for it. My friend celebrated 8 years, I think it was, 12 years. And we led a Saturday night meeting for about 10, 15 years. And we did the same meeting. And it was usually on gratitude, a positive meeting. It got real big. And all these guys in NA come up to me and they go, man, let's buy him a dancer for his birthday. And I said, sure, why not? And they go, no, we want to do it in the meeting. And I said, no, that's probably not a good idea. And they go, oh, no, it's going to be great. You got blah, 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 blah. And they went on and on until finally, somehow or other, I said, okay. Saturday night, 8 o'clock meeting, 100 people in the room. 100 people in the room. Right when we were giving out desire chips, I had to get up and say, if there's anybody nudity offends you, you need to leave now. And I'm sure some people did. And this girl, I asked for a desire chip. This girl got up there, and he didn't go to Strippogram. Oh, no. He had to go to some bar. This girl went down to the smallest G-string you've ever seen. And it was a 5-minute song. Right? I could not believe it, right? And then Blue Velvet is the name of the song. The next Saturday night, every dude in Houston was in our neighborhood. And a lot of dancer girls, too, from the dance club. And a year later, I'm celebrating my birthday at my group, and all of a sudden, there's two guys that I'd never seen before. And at the end of the meeting, they go, you're Chester? And I go, yeah. And they go, we heard about you in California. Because they got upset. They called me on the phone. They got upset. This happened in my group. I got a ticket going to the 8 o'clock Saturday night meeting one night, and they hauled my ass to jail because I wasn't paying my tickets. And I swear to God, they passed the basket in my NA group and got the money and bailed me out. Only time anyone's ever bailed me out of jail in my entire life. Of course, I paid every damn one of them back. All right, thank you.
Yeah, you do. I'm an addict. I'm the newcomer up here. I've been clean since January 29, 1990. And Chester did tell y'all he's a DJ, right?
Yeah.
5 minutes on. Okay. You know, they asked me to come up here and share about the history of NA in Houston, and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to say? I came to Narcotics Anonymous. My very first NA meeting was because I was drove from an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting because they told me I didn't belong there. Right. And took me down the street to Narcotics Anonymous and told me, go in that church, they're going to help you. I told them, man, I tried all that. No. Them people in that church are going to help you. Man, I've been there, I've done that. You know. And they go, no, that's not what you think. Go in there. And I went in there, it was a Northside group, and I walked in and they had time for a burning desire. And I said, well, I'm Max and I'm a junkie. And they go, welcome home. Well, I went home, when I went to leave that meeting, a young black kid and his wife said, come up and looked at me. He goes, come on, man, you're going home with me. I got to let you see my mama. So I went home, and I remember Super Bowl Sunday, and they were having a party. And so I got there, and she goes, oh, Lord, honey, you need something to eat. And so she began to stuff me and then make sure I had a plate to take home. And he says, I'll come get you tomorrow and take you to the meeting. I said, okay. Well, that night I got busted, and I went back to penitentiary. Well, when I got out of penitentiary that time, I got out and I shot dope for 5.5 months. And then, because I'm a dope squirter. You know, I didn't never drink alcohol, so I don't belong over there. So alcohol wasn't my gig, you know. You can't mix blood with it, it wasn't worth doing. And that's my motto. You know, so then when I was in this halfway house, trying to get clean, because basically I was gonna be a derelict if I didn't go there, the counselor told me, you need to go to NA as an aftercare. It's like, okay. So I was able to go out after 30 days, so I caught a ride over to Hugs Not Drugs. Some people call it Thugs with Drugs. But it's still called Hugs Not Drugs, Chester. Anyway, and that's where I got clean at. And, excuse me.
I got a damn phone.
Oh, that's you.
That's Jimmy.
That's Jimmy Steiner. I think it's my damn watch. But, I still ain't figured out how to use this. But anyway, I went to Hugs Not Drugs, had 30 days clean. And I remember it was Julie D was.
Julie.
Was doing it was an acid basket. There was a Mexican guy with a broken foot that he had up on the table, and I don't remember his name. He's not around either. But and Julie passed. And so they were doing this acid basket, and I'm just waiting to get the hell out of this room because I was real, real, real uncomfortable, and I didn't like you people, and y'all made me want to shoot dope. That was my first NA meeting, a full meeting. So then I didn't come back till I had 60 days. And then I got me, you know, they're back there giving out chips. So I went to another NA meeting, and the reason I came back is because y'all clapped for me when I had my 30 days. So I came back, and I didn't like the meeting. I didn't like being around you guys because I wanted to go shoot dope. And then I got my 60 days, and y'all clapped for me, and that made me feel good. So I came back for 90 days. I didn't come back in between because I didn't like you folks. So I got 90 days, and y'all clapped for me. So then I had to white knuckle it real hard to get 6 months. So I went to the 6 months, and they go, okay, if we get PTAC, you got to have a group conscience. I'm like, what the hell? I just want to get the hell out of this room. So I'm sitting there, and they do a group conscience and to chair the meeting, and somebody does something over here. They nominate this guy, and he's got a year, and they nominate this girl, and she's got 18 months, or vice versa. My memory's kind of screwed up. But anyway, I'm sitting there and I'm ready to get out this room, and I don't know anybody in this room. And all of a sudden, I hear this, I nominate Max. And I look over there, and it's like, so dude, I've been in a drug program 25 years ago before I went to penitentiary. And so that was my first part of getting involved in service in the Houston area, in Hugs Not Drugs. And after I did that, I ended up winning. Didn't know anybody in the room, but God takes care of, those stupid people. And he's got a sense of humor, and I'm it. I know he's laughing right now. That's okay. But anyway, so shortly thereafter, I've been to prison, so everybody told me, you need to get sponsored. You need to get sponsored. You've been in prison, get sponsored, been in prison. I know how to go to prison, I just need someone to keep me out, So I got a sponsor, never been to prison, didn't do a bunch of jail time, and isn't Mike W., and he's passed away now, too. So, God dang, it says how old we're getting, ain't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, so my sponsor told me, if I sponsor you, you're going to get involved in service. Okay, so I went and got involved in H&I. Come go to H&I. It's like, okay, so I go to the H&I meeting, and Buddy D asked me if I'd take some books to a meeting. Carrie, because he's on his motorcycle, and I was in my truck. I didn't have a motorcycle yet. But I'll run him over there, too. It's toward my house anyway. So I get over there, and he goes, well, why don't you come on in? Mary was there. Buddy was there. So I go in there, and they asked me, go ahead and share a little bit. So I do. And after the end of the meeting, Buddy goes, it was at New Directions Halfway House. And he goes, y'all like what Max had to share? And they go, yeah, and they all clap. And they go, he goes, good, he's panel leader now. So I ended up doing that meeting for 5 years. But that was my part of service. And like Mary was sharing, I couldn't get high because I had to give up that meat and go down and tell them guys I got loaded. And that meat kept me clean, you know? And so then I'm sitting in the area where they told me you need to go and watch all these people fight. So I went. They needed a, I'm sitting there and somebody goes, we need an ASR alternate. Well, Max will do it. And I was like, Hascona has a way, and Narcotics Anonymous has a way of railroading everybody into everything.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you want to do it or not? You don't know anything about it. There's no training, you know, just get out there and wing it. That's what I did. So then I became ASR alternate. And while we're at it, we're going to make a motion to, on this same day, make a motion to start a new region. Okay? So Jeff B. was the ASR, and he goes, we got this. And I'm thinking, hell, you got this. I don't even know what the hell's going on. But the night before we had to go to Denton, Texas, a Lone Star, and carry the message that we're going to start a new region, Jeff comes over to my house, throws a report on my ottoman, and says, you're up, and quits. So I go to Lone Star Region, as lost as last weekend. That means it ain't never coming back. And share a room with Gino. You ever hear that guy snore? Here, 3 blocks down the road. Kept me up all night. Then I got to go in and read this report. We're going to start a new region. I don't even know what the hell's going on. I'm getting my butt tore up. You know? And and I was a part of starting that new Tejas Mugan region. And I stayed with it. And I finished my commitment as ASR alternate, which they don't have those anymore.
It's RCA.
Became the ASR. And they got different names now.
Yeah.
Everything's changing.
But
that was my part of the deal. So then I'm sitting in the area, and they start talking about they're going to have this convention. And it's called Hackna. And so the guy's reading the finances, and I start asking some questions about the money. And Danny R. was the chair. Yeah, I was asking about money. And Teresa B. was the treasurer. And so I'm starting to ask questions to the ASR at the time. They're just going back and forth. And he goes, well, you need to go to that meeting. Okay, well, I'll mosey my ass on over there. And so I did. And I started, when it come time for the treasurer's report, I started asking questions. And Teresa goes, I quit. You can do it. She got up and walked out. Well, I became the Hackney treasurer. And I was the treasurer of Hackney for the first 3 years, the first three conventions. And Hackney 1, Hackney 2, Hackney 3, Hackney 4, I was the Hackney 4, I was the vice chair, and then I was the chair of Hackney 5, and then I was the chair of Hackney 7. And so I give 25 years, and what was that? What?
Co-chair
of 10. Okay. Co-chair of 10. See, if I could sit and tell you all the service commitments in the Houston area and the Tejas Mugan region that I've done over 25 years, that would be great. But I can't remember them all. You know, I can remember when I was doing Houston area. I know I served on the HASO board, Houston Area Service Office, for 14 years quite a few times. And, so I've done a lot of service in this area and been a part of it. And I guess after this stuff gets over and I start asking questions, I'll probably remember a lot more. But kind of jogs me. You know, I polished that brain cell I had left real good before I came down here. But I didn't even know what I was talking about, you know. But I just thank God for this fellowship because if it wasn't here, I wouldn't have had a life. You know, I mean, this Narcotics Anonymous gave me a life. I got one clean day. I came here, I heard the message, I've stayed clean ever since. And I'm grateful for that. And even though relapse happens, it's a reality, you know, I just want newcomers to know it's not a requirement, you know, because we talk about it so much. But, you know, when people relapse and they come back, I'm grateful we're here. And, you know, I'm grateful this area's grown. And now my home group's part of the new area, which is the Freedom area. And, you know, I took a break from service because I just got tired. You know, I gave 25 good years at it, and I figured I'd take a break for a couple of years. You know, and I've been a part of it a lot. And I love the conventions. I would sit there and I would go, I'm probably not even going to go to the convention, you know? And then somebody calls me, Tony, hey, Max, we need you to be on a panel. Well, what's it about? The history of NA in Houston. Oh, my God. There we go, you know? But then, then I told him I would do it. You know, I didn't even ask who was on the panel. I just said, yes, I would do it, you know, because it's part of giving back to this fellowship, you know? That's something so given freely to me, you know, and, you know, just part of what we do. You know, it's what I'm supposed to do, suit up, show up, and say it, whatever it is. And I'm truly grateful because, you know, when I came here, I resented God. And the reason I did that is because when I was 16 years old, I got busted with some weed. And my mama picked me up, dad picked me up from jail, and my dad, you know, went to tell, say something. My mom told him, shut up. And he did. And so then she turned and said, the preacher wants to see you. So I go to church. Now, I started getting high with the head deacon's son. And so I go to church and see Brother Louie. And he tells me that the parents don't want me there no more because they don't want their kids getting influenced by me. And I'm thinking, hell, man, I get high with all your kids, you know. I didn't tell them that. And I didn't give up the head deacon's son either. So I said, okay. So I went home and told my parents, I ain't got to go to church anymore. See y'all later. You know. But after I got through this and came to the fellowship and started learning about God and the higher power that this program taught me was that I was really pissed off because I really felt unwanted and unloved. You know, and that's what them steps do for you. They kind of teach you some things, you know. And so I would have never learned that. You know, I'd still be out there trying to squirt dope and some veins that I didn't have anymore. I spent the first 36 years of my life trying to kill myself. And now I've been clean, almost 30, and I've been trying to stay alive. And I've had some major health issues, but I'm really feeling good now, you know, so, it's all because of this fellowship. So, I'll catch you on questions and answers. I'm going to pass this to Gary.
I'm a drug addict named Gary.
Hey, drug
addict. Hey, Gary.
It's been by the grace of God and the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I've been clean since July 10th, 1979.
Yes, sir.
I'm as grateful as I know how to be for that today. You know, when I first got clean, I didn't understand what gratitude was because I wasn't grateful for anything. You know, I got to the program of Narcotics Anonymous by mistake. I got locked in a mental institution for shooting pool in my underwear. Which, when I get loaded, is not uncommon behavior. I never know what I'm going to do or who I'm going to do next. Always had that rationale. Gary, I can't believe you did that. And I said, well, it seemed like the thing to do at the time. Well, they had it coming. You know, and the thing that I learned is that I had a problem. You know, I've been a dope fiend, gutter hype, pill head, junkie, drunk. So I don't think there's a 12-step program that I don't qualify for. It's just when I when I got locked in that mental institution, I heard my doctor said, and I had a wonderful doctor, believe that alcoholism was a lithium deficiency. So he had me on as much as 1,500 milligrams a day. But you know what? I didn't get loaded. I was already flying through keyholes. And, you know, I heard him tell my girlfriend, who was a cocaine dealer, and that we're going to have to keep him a long, long time. So that scared me. And, you know, I wasn't used to being scared because I ain't scared of nothing or nobody. But that scared me because I was going to be on a locked ward and I had no way out. So I found a little psych tech to stole her keys. What's wrong with that? That's what I was used to doing. And so, I had it figured out. I had this thing, recovery figured out. I said, yeah, man, I'm going to ask for extra meetings, extra outside meetings, because that guy gave me a ride. And, so I went to meetings. I went to about 7 meetings a week. It just had to be the wrong fellowship. I started learning. And some of the things I've learned, I tell you what, you can learn how to stay clean, and you can learn how to do dope in Narcotics Anonymous. But anyway, I got kicked out of more meetings than most people get a chance to go to. They put up a special sign just for me. Told me I couldn't talk about drugs. I said, well, you gotta leave that out of your story. I said, I only got one story. The truth. It got to that point where I had never heard of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I knew what AA, I thought you go to AA meetings, you get that little card you show your boss and gives you your job back. That's what I thought, but it's my best thing that got me here. So I realized, I got this, and my doctor told my girlfriend, he ain't gonna last 2 weeks. And I showed him, I lasted 4 weeks. and it was not my intention to get loaded. It just that I had no place to go to stay clean. I was doing good. I got a leave of absence. They didn't discharge me, they gave me a leave of absence. How do you get a leave of absence from a mental institution? And I thought it was a good idea. I managed to hustle up a little Honda Hum CB motorcycle, and I could put my toolbox on the back of it, and I could ride it to work. And the toolbox was, I was riding to work. I got a job back. My old boss was didn't take a chance on me, and that was progress because I got to a city of 3 million people. I was unemployed. There wasn't nobody going to take another chance on me. Because I did things like, I'd tell my boss I'd be working, I was a bricklayer at the time, I'd be working, and I'd say, I need to go get a drink. And he said, well, okay, the water barrel's right over there. Well, that's not what it meant to me. I went down to an ice house down the street, got a drink. Because that's what I told him I was going to do. I just was not quite that specific. And he met me down there after work, so it was okay anyway. It got to that point where I've never reached that seemingly hopeless state of mind or body and the progression of the disease. If I had a problem with one drug, I just didn't do that drug anymore. you know, I do this one over here instead. You know, my wife accused me of having a drinking problem, so I didn't drink for 30 days. I just smoked a lot of pot, ate a few pills, and everything's fine. You know, it was that mental institution where I found the program of Narcotics Anonymous, and I found it by accident. Coming back from a relapse, it only took me one day to do what had taken me years to do previously, and that's overdose. I didn't plan on it. I didn't want to cop that high. I just wanted that feeling of not feeling, you know. And that's all it took, because I didn't go back into that mental institution with that attitude like, I'm going to get over on these people. The attitude was gone. When I was angry, they knew I was angry. You know, I wasn't very passive about it. And I loved that place, you know. I even loved the foam rubber furniture. I found out what a sport was. I didn't know what a sport was. You know, it was better than your fingers, I guess. Yeah. And that's what it took. I stumbled across a meeting going into a hospital. My intention was I'm going to break into the cafeteria and steal all their shit so I can take it up to my room so I can sell it. I need cigarette money. Not just business. I did have kind of a warped perspective. And I stumbled in that cafeteria, and I had a meeting going on. Seven guys, and you're right, there was no girls there. Mm-hmm. I imagine they were all too scared to come. And, you know, I sat and the chairperson invited me to come sit down. Come on, sit down. And I scared the hell out of me, because Big Al, you know, I'm sure Chester. Big dude. The last I heard of Big Al, he was up for four counts of murder. And I was the guy that ripped him off. Well, I said, shh. So I had that fear again. And he said, well, come on in. Have a seat. Most of the guys there were convicts, and they were sharing the one-upmanship, and you know who, and I know who, and this and that, and this and that. What I heard was the biggest bunch of liars, cheats, and thieves I've ever heard in my life. And what it did, it made me feel right at home. People just like me, you know, just exactly like me, you know. Bothered me. This program bothered me because I had people ask me, Gary, what's your drug of choice? What's your drug of choice? And I ran such a gauntlet of drugs that I said, what do you got? I got involved I could see one thing. I went to one Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And I tell you how I got to go to that Narcotics Anonymous meeting, because I read a book called Patients' Rights, and it was their duty and responsibility to take me over there. I was the representative for the neurotics and the psychotics. They said, Gary, how can you be the representative for the neurotics and the psychotics? And I said, I believe any state of mind can be chemically induced. And they couldn't argue with that. You know, I didn't do most of them. And so they took me over there, and that became my first home group. Alive and kicking? Yeah. I will always be eternally grateful for that. Because I went to meetings there, and I heard more gut level honesty than I've ever heard. They told me, meaning makers make it. Mm-hmm. Keep coming back. That's when I heard, Nobody ever told me keep coming back. I said, get the fuck out of here. Don't ever come back. And that's the only place, that was my safe place. That was my home group. And I tell you what the problem was. You'd go into a meeting room and there'd be six or seven people in the meeting. And then you'd go in the bathroom and there'd be six or seven people in the bathroom shooting dope. Well, I found out real quick that's not going to work very good for me, so I cleaned out the bathroom, went to the meeting. You know, I don't know how it evolved. I'm grateful that it is what it is today. You know, there was a whole lot of change that went on there. So, I'm thinking, man, and they come up with this thing, 90 meetings in 90 days. Now, there's a city of 3 million people. There's one NA meeting a week. How the hell are you going to go to 90 meetings in 90 days? It just made no sense. So it became, we got to start meetings. You know how to start a meeting? Resentment in a coffee pot. Because that's how NA got started. I'm going to tell you that. Man, I got tired of getting kicked out of those places. We started our own NA meeting. We started the Source. Source was, we had a neighborhood house, I guess you'd call it. Neighborhood house that we rented, and we kept it for almost 6 months until nobody wanted to pay rent anymore. Now, I can't imagine Addict not wanting to pay anything. But that was the fold, and in that process, some people stayed clean. And then the thing came up about we started to keep it simple. And I think we only met twice a week starting out. We met in my apartment. And it grew too big. It was a little studio apartment. We got too big for the apartment, so we rented. I think we paid $5 a month, something like that. I don't know. And we rented a conference room or a pool room. And see, we probably had 20 people in a meeting. That was huge. It progressed from there. And we the landlord. Bless his heart. Because the Boy Scouts had had this building and they had screwed it up so bad that they couldn't do anything with it. Needed painting, it needed new roof, needed new windows in it, needed everything. And we said, well, if you can let us have meetings there, we'll fix it up for you. So we fixed it up. That's where we moved the group that met in my apartment. We moved it to Bel Air Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where we got to start. And then the word got out. Narcotics Anonymous is alive and well. Mm-hmm. Some people came to Narcotics Anonymous that keep it simple, and it heard something that pissed them off, so they went over and started Hugs Not Drugs. Resentment the coffee pot. There's nothing wrong with that. Gave us something to talk bad about. and it progressed. History has to have a beginning, and the oldest group, I don't care what anybody says, the oldest group of Narcotics Anonymous in the state of Texas is live and kicking.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe that because that's what my sponsor told me. history was, and most people aren't aware, the first World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous, not to be held in California, was held in Houston, Texas in 1978. That pissed a lot of people off. That's why they started Pacific Northwest Convention. among a few others, but, and it did. And they did the best they could, the best they knew how. In the city of Houston at the time, they had a Young Minds meeting there. And but it was a success. What it did is it opened the door for Narcotics Anonymous in the city of Houston. After that, I was in that first wave of an explosion. You know, people were finding a way to get clean. You know, and I hear these things, well, and they saved my life. No, they didn't save my life. I could have been doing another 25 to 40 years. You know? That'd be my luck. But I found a new way of life. You know? And, you know, I've always been what you get out, what you put in. Mm-hmm. And so we, and there were just a chosen few, I guess. And it wasn't my idea. I don't want to be of service. I just want to stay alive. You know? Like, and so we started a lot of groups. And a lot of groups took off, you know. They even started a group on the north side. Could you believe that? There wasn't nothing on the north side. You go out to the heights, everybody's fucked up. And, you know, and there got to be a few groups going on around. So it became a fellowship in the city of Houston. Well, what do you do after that? Well, we're going to start an area. What's an area? We didn't know. Some of the original members that started Alive and Kicking are still sober. They just go to that other fellowship. They're still around. Probably 10 of the original members of Keep It Simple still came. They live all over the country now, but they're still changing. So getting it started was probably the hardest thing. You know, Narcotics Anonymous started in 1953. When did it take off? Not until the 70s. You know, and growing, we started Haskona, Houston Area Service Committee of Narcotics Anonymous. And that's about as simple as we could get it. You know, ASR. I remember that position well. That I was the first ASR. And they got money together to send me to the World Service Conference in California. Now, that's like taking the little fish and putting them in the big pond. I thought that was like going to Mecca. In California, all these people are clean and they're doing so good. Let me tell you, people are fucked up out there as they are here. And, you know, I was an ASR from an area, Houston area. And so they didn't have a position for me. And I tell you what they do, if they don't have a position, they'll give you one. They gave me the Texas State Representative. And my head fell about this big. I'm the Texas State Representative. And you know who my alternate was? Gary Holman. it was interesting being in that line. Depth, magnitude of service was very interesting. Because what it did for me, it made me make a personal vow to myself. It made me make a vow that I would come back to Houston and do everything I could to start region. Because at that time, Texas didn't have a region. You know, that's why we started the Texas Unity Conference. First one was conference because we take care of business. To get a region started. See, I've always had ulterior motives, and that was one of them. And I thought it would take at least 2 years to get a region started in Texas. It took one weekend. And they made me the chairperson. And I told them then, I said, whatever you do, don't make me important. Because if I become important, then I will kind of manipulate my way and forget about your way. You know? And man, that was tough, because chairing the first region, and I chaired the first 2 years, that was like trying to chair a full contact sport. We had all the positions full, except I thought there was one that we really needed, and that was Sergeant of Arms. you know, and A was still a full contact sport.
I think Haskona had a Sergeant of Arms at one time.
Yeah, that was proud of my idea. But we got to start, we got Haskona start, or Lone Star start. And, you know, I could see, going to world, that Texas is going to have a region. In fact, even then, I could see we're probably going to have 4 to 6 regions. Now, you could tell somebody that, they think you were nuts. How many regions are in Texas right now?
Four, five.
El Paso.
I thought there were 6.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yes.
Might be 6.
Well, if there are not some, they should be. And, you know, the history, it blows me away, because you take the people in this room in 1979, that's probably more people in this room that were clean in Narcotics Anonymous of state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wow. Now, think about that. See, I believe in miracles. I not only believe in them, I expect them. And as long as I expect those miracles, they continue to happen. This is a small convention. History will repeat itself. And, you know, what I found out is, long as the spiritual principles, the steps and traditions are upheld and maintained, all will be well. That's it. What is Narcotics Anonymous? 12 steps and 12 traditions. And the spiritual principles involved. So historically, the more that is kept going, the bigger it'll get. You know, how big is this convention going to get? No one knows. What's this convention going to be like 20 years from now? No one has the foggiest idea. You know, being involved in, I can't say I got Narcotics Anonymous started. No, I didn't. I just was put in a position that I didn't want to be in to save my life. And, you know, there was an old saying that was told me a long time ago, you know, this program has never promised to open the gates of heaven and let me in. But it sure has opened the gates of hell and let me out. For that, I'm grateful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
We have a couple of minutes for questions if everybody wants to ask anybody anything.
I'm having Christine.
Hi, Christine.
I don't have any questions, but I just wanted to thank the four of you, everybody else in the room too. And I, of course, y'all know I cry, but I wept as each of you spoke. Because this is the deal for me, right? It's like Mary said, and it came up in other points. You know, I do get caught up. You know, I do take for granted the fact that I have this great life. But when I hear you guys talk about how this got started, and you know what I mean? It's better than Disney movie. It's really is.
And I wanted to mention one thing that none of us probably remembered. There were only 5 groups in Houston. There was Alive and Kicking, Keep It Simple, Hugs Not Drugs, Chance for Freedom. Chance for Freedom's been around a long time. And, sorry? Oh, 30. Yeah, you're getting ready to celebrate an anniversary. And there's one I'm missing. And then Baytown came along. Who am I missing?
Keep It Clean.
Hugs Not Drugs.
Keep It Simple. Live and Kick. Keep It Simple.
Yeah. So it, when you look at the schedule today.
Yeah. That's right.
We are capable of so much. Just look at your schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, that speaks for itself. That all of us play a huge part. It may not be grand, it may not be, you know, but every little thing that we do to carry the message is important to the history of Narcotics Anonymous in Texas. So I just wanted to show you the progression of how we grew from when we all got clean. So you've all played a part in that. So you should clap for yourselves.
My friend here said that we went to 1996, right? We went to the World Convention, Kansas City and myself, right? And I think we came back and you said we got saved at the World. We got saved at the World Convention. We came back full of piss and vinegar. And it was a struggle.
It was.
But we started Basic Recovery. We started Positive Bondage. We started Saturday Night Live. We started Addicts Anonymous.
Yeah.
We started a lot of groups during that period. It was a huge growth period.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy. And it always wasn't. We always weren't real kind to each other.
Not always, no.
I remember going to, and I'll close with this. I remember going when I was the treasurer of Pascoon. And Max used to tell me all the time, "You're out of order." Yeah, let's circle. You want to circle up?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
They want us. They want you to read this, Jimmy. They want you to read this.
Let me see that. Oh.